Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
To the Hogan Era Podcast. I'm your host, JP John Paz, right here on the two-man power trip of wrestling's podcasting empire, part of the TMPT feed. Each and every week here on the Hogan Era Podcast, we're talking about the greatest moments, matches, and feuds ever in the history of the business, aka the golden era of wrestling, 1984 to 1993. The Hogan Era, the era that made Vince McMahon a billionaire, an era that made the WWE worth approximately $9 billion. Each and every week here, of course, we're talking about guys like Rowdy Roddy Piper, Macho Man Randy Savage, Paul Orndorff, Andre the Giant, King Kong Bundy, Big John Studd, Jesse the Body, Ventura, and so on and so forth. Before on the show, we've talked about Bret the Hitman Hart. Today, we'll be focusing on not just Bret Hart, but also Jim the Anvil Neidhart, and we'll be talking about the Hart Foundation. Now, recently, I've been looking into a bunch of Hogan matches, working on a project for the Hulkster. Hopefully, we'll be out within a few months. I'm hoping, praying, we'll see. But I've been looking for this 1987 match against Bret Hart. Supposedly, it happened. I'm looking it up. There's sites there saying it happened. There's not a definite date, but they're saying that sometime in 87, somebody missed a show and Bret was forced to face Hogan one-on-one. No proof of it, so I can't put it out there. I can't really say anything about it. There's no proof of the match, so it's almost like it definitely didn't happen, although I'm holding out hope that maybe somehow, some way, it did happen. But it just looks like it's one of those things where maybe wishful thinking on somebody's part, or maybe somebody's hoping that it happened. But as far as my looking it up and doing research, I haven't been able to find any proof that the match actually occurred. It's not a great Hogan sites out there and Hogan YouTube pages and archives and different things like that. And I haven't been able to find anything on the match on any of those. They also, on those, some of those sites mention, and some of those archives mention, that there is a supposed match, but there's no proof of it too. So they're in the same boat as I am, where we're looking, we're trying to find out if it happened. And lo and behold, it doesn't look like it happened. There's no proof of it happening. But there is some proof of some Hart Foundation matches against Hogan. We'll go into that today, and we'll talk about the history of the Hart Foundation in the WWF. When you look at the Hart Foundation in totality, one of the greatest tag teams of all time, easily one of the greatest tag teams in WWE history, two-time WWE Hall of Famer for Bret Hart, obviously one-time Hall of Famer for Jim the Anvil Neidhart, as they went in a few years ago as the Hart Foundation, and Bret obviously went in as a singles by himself as well. So when you look at the Hart Foundation and really when they started, you're going to be shocked, because I was shocked. I knew that obviously they you know, is their brother-in-laws, you know, they were RIP Jim the Anvil Neidhart, but Bret and Anvil obviously had a long relationship. Obviously, after his football career, Neidhart went into Stampede Wrestling. So I was just trying to figure out, did they really team? You know, when did they really get created as a tag team? I know in WWF, when they first debuted there, they were obviously the Hart Foundation as a tag team. But were they a team before that in Stampede? Yes, all the way back to 1980. Bobby Bass, No Class Bobby Bass, who I just interviewed recently on the Two Man Power Trip. Check that out in the feed. He's a great wrestler. He's on Vice, the Vice Tales from the Territories about Stampede Wrestling. Great territory wrestler, big time legend there. Mike Sharp Jr., Duke Myers, they defeated the Hart brothers. So it was Bret Hart, Keith Hart, and Jim Neidhart. So that's 11/28/1980. It's the first time that those two ever were in a team together. Then you had Bret and Keith Hart and Neidhart defeating Bobby Bass, Duke Myers, and Mike Sharp Jr. that next night after that. So, of course, Mike Sharp Jr., everyone knows him as Iron Mike Sharp. They had a few other matches, a few other six-mans. The first time they ever teamed up as a tag team together was 1982. 5/28/1982, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart, and Jim Neidhart defeated the Masters of Disaster, Duke Myers, and Kerry Brown in Calgary, Alberta at the Victoria Pavilion. That was the first tag match ever for the Hart Foundation as far as just a tag team rather than a six-man involving Keith Hart. So 5/28/82, and we'll find out in a little bit. The last tag match they had together was really 1991. So 10 years of tagging. Really, if you want to start when 1980, when they had that six-man, you could say they teamed together even longer. Pretty damn amazing. As they went through and they teamed together in Stampede, it was only a little bit through 1982, about five or six matches or so. They're defeating Duke Myers and the legendary Dynamite Kid. They're losing to Duke Myers and Dynamite Kid. Their actually last match together is against the Cuban Assassin and Francisco Flores in Saskatchewan, Canada. That would be 8/17/1983. Enter the World Wrestling Federation, the WWF 3/26/1985, the Hart Foundation make their debut as Bret Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart defeated the legendary Mario Mancini and SD Jones 2 minutes 30 seconds championship wrestling TV taping from the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie, New York. Then they would go on to defeat Jim Landis and Jim Powers on another championship wrestling taping, again from Poughkeepsie, New York. That's obviously that was on 4/16/85. That's obviously not the Jim Landis. I mean, I guess there's, I don't know the story behind this, and I would love to know if anybody knows. DM me, hit me up, email me that why somebody is using the legendary Jim Landis. Anybody that doesn't know, he's probably the greatest draw outside of maybe Hulk Hogan in wrestling history, a former world champion, used to draw 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 people all over the United States. Basically the first big star in the U.S., Jim Landis. But it's funny here. It's got to be some sort of rib that somebody is using that name, or maybe just some sort of joke. And it's very weird. But him and Jim Powers lose to the Hart Foundation. As you go on and they start to kind of pick up steam, their first big match and their first big feud is really going to be against the British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith and Dynamite Kid. When you look at the influx of the Stampede wrestlers or the Calgary wrestlers or the Stu Hart guys into the WWF in 85, right after WrestleMania 1, it's basically an infusion of, we now have some of the greatest workers in wrestling, some of the greatest in-ring wrestlers right now on the card, and we're really going to showcase that. It's not just the big guys. It's not just the land of the monsters, even though it kind of is in some aspects. We're going to have a buffet. We're going to have a card filled with awesome wrestling, monsters, sideshow freaks, Hulk Hogan, charismatic stars, legends. I mean, they're just going to be a buffet of just great talent and different type of wrestlers and different type of wrestling. And really, when they bring in Dynamite Kid, Davey Boy Smith, two of the best in the world, Dynamite's probably the best at this point. Bret Hart obviously will develop into the best, and Jim the Anvil Neidhart, who is just perfect dressing and the perfect guy to be teaming up with Bret Hart, because he's the power, he's the muscle, he's the charisma to start when Bret was still kind of, you know, getting his bearings and, you know, starting to learn his way around the business. Neidhart was the guy cutting those awesome promos, having the laugh, having the look. I think somebody said it on Twitter the other day. It's like, you can't mistake Jim Neidhart for somebody else. Nobody else looks like Jim Neidhart. And when you look at him, he looks like a damn pro wrestler. It's like, who is this big freak? And he's one of those guys where he fit perfectly into this era of the WWF. So really, on the Prism Network, 4/27/1985, Bret Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart versus the British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith, Dynamite Kid, go to a time limit draw, 20 minutes, set the world on fire in the Philadelphia Spectrum in Philly, PA. So as you kind of go through 85, it's big time feud and a lot of matches with the Bulldogs. Then as you kind of go through, they're going to be working with some other teams. They're going to be getting a lot of wins over George Wells and Tony Atlas, Rick McGraw and Sweet Hansen, Jim Powers, Tony Garea, SD Jones and Tony Garea. They're going to be losing some matches to the British Bulldogs. There's going to be another match on MSG. Bret Hart and Neidhart versus the Bulldogs goes to a curfew time limit draw on MSG in Madison Square Garden, of course, New York, New York. That's on 7/13/85, and the match goes about 13 minutes. Curfew time limit draw means basically a time ran out that they're not going to do the match any longer. The match, quote-unquote, ran out of time because the building is only going to hold a certain amount of time until the quote-unquote curfew hits, whenever that predetermined curfew was. So as we go through and you just look at it, they're going to wrestle another awesome tag team and get some victories over the Killer Bees. Then the Killer Bees are going to get some wins over the Hart Foundation as well. They get a title match on 8/19/85 in Orlando, Florida against the U.S. Express, Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo. They take the loss there, but they gain some nice experience. Pretty awesome looking at the tag team division, really. Killer Bees, Hart Foundation, U.S. Express, the British Bulldogs. I mean, it was quite a great division at this point. I know you wouldn't necessarily think of the Hillbillies, which is, of course, Cousin Junior and Uncle Elmer, as being a great tag team. But, you know, they were over and they were popular, and the Hart Foundation would get some victories over them. They would actually exchange some losses, if I count that, of course, to the Hillbillies when it was the Hillbillies, Uncle Elmer, and Hillbilly Jim. teaming up there as we roll into 1986. There's a big match, 1-18-86. The Hart Foundation defeated the British Bulldogs in 20 minutes on a primetime wrestling TV taping from Landover, Maryland. So good stuff there from the Hart Foundation, the British Bulldogs. Awesome chemistry between them, and they always had awesome matches together. You absolutely got to love that feud. I mean, if you go back, I mean, they're not going to have bad matches. 3/23/1986, the Hart Foundation defeated the Killer Bees in 15 minutes in Maple Leaf Gardens, Toronto, Ontario. Of course, again, this was also part of a primetime wrestling TV tapings as well. All-Star Wrestling, you've had, well, first Championship Wrestling on 4/21/86, Jim Neidhart and Bret Hart defeated Don Driggers and Lanny Poffo. Then the next night, the next TV taping, All-Star Wrestling, which was on 5/5/86, the Bulldogs defeated the Hart Foundation by DQ in about 5 minutes in Ontario, Brantford, Ontario. They would have a few more house show matches where the Bulldogs were getting the wins. All, of course, these rolled up would be tag team title matches. Enter in the Rougeau brothers, who started a brief feud with the Hart Foundation. They would exchange some victories back and forth. The Rougeau brothers, you get the best of them in a decent amount of time and a decent amount of matches. There's a Superstars Wrestling, the first ever Superstars taping, 8/26/1986. The Hart Foundation defeated Coco Beware and Paul Roma in 2 minutes from Providence, Rhode Island. The Rougeau brothers and the Hart Foundation continue on with a little bit of a mini feud there. Iron Sheik and Volkov kind of come into the fray on Nessun on 8/9/1986, and they beat Hart and Neidhart in 7 minutes. Tough loss there for the Hart Foundation, but obviously Sheik and Volkov were over like Rover. 9/22/86, the Rougeau brothers on MSG from Madison Square Garden, New York, New York. The Rougeau brothers defeated the Hart Foundation in 15 minutes in a banger, folks, as they say today, in a very, very good match. Man, what a tag team division. Whew. You know, just wait until the tag team division really starts going and they really start getting their bearings under them, and they bring in teams like Demolition and Strike Force and the Islanders. I mean, it's just, man, what a tag team division. You want to talk about one of the greatest tag team divisions of all time. Man, mid to late 80s WWF might be the greatest tag team division of all time. It's up there. It's pretty damn amazing. From the Maple Leaf Garden House Show on 11/16/1986, the Hart Foundation defeated Haku and Tama, like I just mentioned, the Islanders. Superstars taping number 13. The Hart Foundation is getting a big win in only 5 minutes, shockingly, in Notre Dame, Indiana, over the British Bulldogs. As we roll on and we continue on, they are getting a bunch of tag team title shots against the Bulldogs, which are taking some losses, and rolling kind of into eventually getting a tag team title run, and we're kind of building up for that. But it's just interesting to note that at one point Dynamite got injured and he was getting replaced by Junkyard Dog on a few tapings. So there was a Prism Network show, and then there was a show at Maple Leaf Wrestling. Of course, Prison Network was in Philly, and Maple Leaf Wrestling was the Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto, Ontario, January 10th and then January 11th. Both TV tapings, both for the tag titles. Davey Boy Smith and Junkyard Dog defeated the Hart Foundation. Both matches went about 15 minutes apiece. So interesting to note that Dynamite Kid was injured for a small period of time, and he was replaced, and still beating the Hart Foundation, unfortunately. Corporal Kirshner steps in. Billy Jack Haynes steps in at one point. The Crusher steps in at one point. Siva Afi, Roddy Piper at one point steps in. So they're doing a bunch of different guys stepping in and defeating the Hart Foundation. But every devil gets his due. 1/26/1987, double duty here, a part of the tapings. The first part of the tapings was a tag title change as Dynamite Kid is injured, so that's why the match goes so short. But it's the Hart Foundation defeating the British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith and Dynamite Kid, in about 3 minutes, Superstars taping number 22, Sundome in Tampa, Florida. Then a part of Superstars taping 24 that same day later on, of course, in Sundome, Tampa, the Hart Foundation defended their titles and defeated the Islanders in about 5 minutes. So huge time there for the Hart Foundation, and a big win for the Hart Foundation as they defeated the Islanders. If you look at the run of the Hart Foundation, they win it on January 26, 1987 at Superstars. They, which of course, Danny Davis, being the heel that he is, and the Hart Foundation were heels here, was helping them and cheating along. And that also helped, you know, kind of disguise and mask the injury of Dynamite Kid and make the injury look okay and make the victory look, you know, even more wonky, if you will, but even more controversial, as the Hart Foundation would go on to hold the tag team titles for 274 days. Big time run. They end up losing the tag titles to Strikeforce, Tito Santana, and Rick Martel on October 27th, 1987, Superstar taping from Syracuse, New York. Of course, then the Strikeforce hold the titles for 152 days. They lose it at WrestleMania 4 in Atlantic City, New Jersey, March 27th, 1988. Demolition, of course, had that record-breaking run of 478 days, which, of course, now is clearly owned by the Usos. I think the Usos are at 578 days for their awesome tag team title run. The Demolition and that awesome 478-day title run losing to the Brainbusters, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, July 28th, 89. Saturday night's main event, number 22, Worcester, Mass. Two out of three falls. The Brainbusters won 2-1. Of course, it was on a tape delay, so you didn't see it until July 29th, 1989. Part of a Superstars taping in Wheeling, West Virginia on October 2nd, 1989. Demolition then wins the titles back from the Brainbusters. They hold the titles for 72 days, losing to the Colossal Connection on December 13th, 1989 at Superstars taping in Huntsville, Alabama. The awesome team of Andre and Haku lose the titles 109 days later back to Axe and Smash at WrestleMania 6. If you remember this, Crush, of course, joins the fray. They kind of turn heel eventually, and the Demolition is Axe, Smash, and Crush. They have the free bird rule invoke where any of the three can defend the title, and any two of the three were allowed to defend the titles at any point. But then on August 27th, 1990, a SummerSlam best 2 out of 3 falls match, the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart, and Jim the Anvil Neidhart defeated Demolition to win back the tag titles for their second and final run as tag team champions. A pretty damn good match there, and they defeated Crush and Smash in that one. They would go on to hold the belts for 209 days. Initially, it wasn't supposed to be 209 days because on October 30th, 1990, main event number 4 from Fort Wayne, Indiana, the Rockers actually win the tag titles in a best 2 out of 3 falls match. But the WWF decided to never recognize the title change, and we never saw it air on TV because the ropes broke and the match kind of turned to shit. They did what they could. The match didn't turn out the way they wanted. Vince didn't like the way it looked. So guess what? Not only do the Rockers, they didn't redo the match or anything. Not only do the Rockers not get that win, it gets erased from history, and they're not known as tag team champions, which is just nuts because they definitely deserve the titles and should have got a run during that reign. I mean, they're part of some great tag team match, and they're one of the greatest tag teams in one of the greatest tag team divisions of all time. But Vince didn't like the way it looked. He thought it maybe was a sign to keep the tag titles on the Hart Foundation. So wipe that from the memory banks and the record books, as the Hart Foundation would then go on to hold it for 209 days, losing, of course, at WrestleMania 7 on March 24th, 1991, Los Angeles, California, to Brian Knobbs and Jerry Sags, known as the Nasty Boys. So quite a nice, good tag team run there for the Hart Foundation. And like I mentioned before, their last match together would be on 7-1-1991. The Nasty Boys, Knobbs, and Sags defeated the Hart Foundation by DQ, WWF on MSG, Madison Square Garden, New York, New York. And they really wouldn't team again, you know, post-Hogan era, of course, until 1997, when the Hart Foundation was together. And, you know, they had a dark match together. They had the Hart Foundation teaming up against Goldust, Shamrock, Austin, LOD. Of course, that was the Canadian Stampede. Then in 1997, Dude Love and Undertaker defeated Bret Hart and Neidhart on a house show together, which is insane. That's awesome that they were able to team up again in 1997. There's a six-man at a house show, basically two nights in a row. Mankind, Austin, Undertaker defeating Bret Hart, Neidhart, and Bulldog both of those nights. One was in Toronto, one was in Detroit, and that was in 1997. But as far as Hogan is concerned, and Hogan and the Hart Foundation and his history, 4/23/1987, there's a dark match, and it's a handicap match. Billy Jack Haynes and Hulk Hogan defeated the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart, Neidhart, and Danny Davis. That was a part of a Superstars taping in Worcester, Mass. And, of course, that was just a dark match on that taping. Then 1/5/1988, another dark match, another 2-on-3 handicap match. The Mega Powers, Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage, defeated the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart, Jim Neidhart, and the Honky Tonk Man in about 6 minutes. Of course, that was a dark match, handicap match, a part of TV tapings. Those wouldn't be the only matches that they were involved with Hulk Hogan in. The 1990 and 1991 Royal Rumble, they were both in there together. One, of course, was in Orlando. One was in Miami. Both were won by the immortal Hulk Hogan. So the Hart Foundation Hall of Famers, two-time tag team champions in the greatest era maybe of tag team wrestling of all time. Look back at it. The Hart Foundation are one of the greatest tag teams of all time. If you want to put them in your top 10, you should. If you want to put them in your top 5, I have no problem with that either. That's how good the Hart Foundation were as a tag team. So let's wrap it up and head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at 2ManPowerTrip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Head over to TeePublic, tpublic.com/store/TMPT, and get your Hogan era shirt today. Also, check out Patreon, patreon.com/TMPTempire for the latest and greatest from the 2ManPowerTrip. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Hogan era podcast. I'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the 2-Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at 2-Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. 2-Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.
Generation Heavyweight Champion, Hulk